The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with Bob Dio, engineering and producing on the other side of the glass. Bob's looking real sharp today. Good-looking tie, a black shirt. Very, very nice. Very styling, man. Together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show the day after May Day. That would mean it's Thursday, May 2nd, 2019. You're listening to 1030 Tucson's Voice for trusted local news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening. That means anywhere there's a computer in the world, you most likely can listen to the Buckmaster Show at buckmastershow.com. Podcasts available 24/7, buckmastershow.com. The live line number 790-2040. If there's any time during the hour you would like to join in the conversation, we encourage you to do so. Let's go now to the Tucson City Council Ward 6 offices of Steve Kasachek. Councilman Kasachek, how are you, sir?
Doing okay. How are you doing today, Bill?
Doing very well. Councilman, we are at the front lines of what is a full-blown humanitarian crisis. How have the people of Tucson responded to this?
Oh, the people of Tucson have been A1, top drawer, absolutely on top of their game. That's to their credit, and this has been going on for 5 years. It really peaked around the first of this year since since we moved into the Benedictine Monastery, taking migrant families early this year, late January. We've processed 7,000 plus people through there. In the previous 4 years, the Casa Elitis program had handled 6,000. So in 4 months, we've done more than by over 1,000 than what we'd seen in the prior 4 years, and understand that there's no end in sight necessarily to the need, but there certainly is an end in sight to our ability to use the Benedictine as an intake center. So the city of Tucson residents have stepped up to the plate. We have used few public sector resources. That is preferred in my view. We had to open up a community center just before Easter, and because we were told by Border Patrol and ICE that we should expect 200 plus individuals per day for the indefinite future.
Mm.
The Benedictine at the time had approximately 400 guests staying there, and so both the city and the county opened up some temporary shelters. That lasted over Easter weekend. They were staffed by city and county employees that were, frankly, working on their own over the weekend. Normal pay, but they were there on special assignments. Both of them have been shut down now because the numbers that we were told to expect did not come to pass. The last few days, this is Thursday, probably Monday, Tuesday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, the numbers were down significantly. I had a meeting with several members of the Border Patrol, and there were lots of other people in the meeting. I can describe that if you want in a minute, but we were told at that meeting that Border Patrol felt that the reason the numbers were down was because the Mexican government had begun interdicting people in Mexico, and so the migrant families had looked for other routes to follow. It's not that they had stopped coming. It's that they were either being arrested and sent back home, or they were chasing other routes. And just last night, we understand that there were about 290 people arrested in Lukeville. So they have, again, made it across the border and are heading for Tucson.
You will be joining with other community leaders. The Benedictine Monastery Chapel on North Country Club is really just blocks away from your Ward 6 council office, and you've been working since the beginning with the Benedictine property owner, Ross Rolney. If Mr. Rolney hadn't stepped up, it would have been a different story, wouldn't it?
Oh, my gosh. So understand the population we're dealing with. These are the 7,000 plus people that would have otherwise been dropped off on the street at the Greyhound bus station. They don't speak English. Many of them don't speak Spanish. Oftentimes when we're doing the assessments with the adults, we're speaking to children in Spanish, and the children are speaking an indigenous language to the adults, and so that's sort of how the translation chain goes. The people would have been unable to speak the language. They've been tired, cold, need food, need clothing. They've been on the road for weeks, literally, fleeing some absolutely horrible conditions in their home countries. And so, without the monastery, we would have had those 7,000 plus people dropped off on the streets in the city of Tucson. So this community has really rolled up its sleeves and said, we're going to recognize and take care of this humanitarian crisis. We're not going to get involved in the politics of border walls or any of that. And so if you came to my office now or walked into the Benedictine, I could show you the storage rooms that are full of clothing, of hygiene products, of food. We have computers set up and cell phones that are on loan that we are contacting next of kin and sponsors in other parts of the country with the migrant families. All of this is being done with the volunteers from this community. But without the Benedictine to do the intake, there's a medical triage going on again, staffed by volunteers from the U of A Medical Center. That just doctors and nurses coming over, offering their time. We have people staffing the clothing room. We have people on the phones and on the getting bus tickets and contacting next of kin. We have playrooms for the kids where they're doing art, and some of the art is what's coming out of these kids is pretty amazing stuff. Working with an art interpreter right now to put together an event where we're going to take some of those pictures and not identify the kids, but identify some of the trauma that's showing through in some of these pictures. So, without the Benedictine, this would be an entirely different conversation.
What is your news conference? You'll be meeting with members of the media tomorrow, joining with the mayor and others. What is your message going to be tomorrow?
We need to establish a long game. The Benedictine Monastery will be redeveloped, and it will be. We now have a long a commitment with Ross Rolney to stay on that site through the end of July. I'm not inclined to wait until the middle of July to try and figure this out in terms of where we're gonna transition these services. So there are actually two asks. Number one is volunteers. The volunteers that have been staffing this facility 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for all year, but really for the last 5 years in various locations, but all year at the monastery. They're tired, and these are people like you and me. They've got jobs, they've got families, they've got homes, and yet they're stepping up and serving over there. So one of the asks is we need more volunteers. We need more community members to go through the Casa Elitas training and there'll be a background check. We're not going to just let anybody come in and start working with these families because it's a very vulnerable population. The second ask is we're reaching out to the faith community and nonprofits and the private sector. If there are people in this community who've got spaces that they could lend to help with this effort, then we need them. We need them to come forward and say, here's what we have. It's a warehouse. It's a back room of a church. You name whatever it is. Because we are not going to be able to transition all of what we're doing at the Benedictine into one single location. It's just too immense. It's the capacity of what we're doing over there. So we're looking for several, and we have four or five churches around town. But they're stuffed to the gills, and like I told you, we have another 240 heading this direction right now, and who knows what tomorrow will bring. Frankly, who knows what 2 hours from now will bring, and that's how volatile the situation is. And one of the messages that I delivered to Border Patrol was that we need a better communication chain. They need to not call us and say in 2 hours, and this is what happened on Good Friday, 2 hours from now we're going to drop off 30 people at the Greyhound bus station. Well, you know, that's no way to communicate with the people who have been really carrying the load on this. Subsequent to that, that very same day, they said we're going to drop off another 60 at the bus station. Well, we got that taken care of. Because we had volunteers, again, Good Friday, willing to go down and pick them up and take them to some of the nonprofits we're dealing with. But Border Patrol needs to be a better partner in this. I understand from a law enforcement perspective, their go-to is not release on recognizance. Their go-to is arrest and detain and send them home. But these are people who are seeking asylum, and they have legal rights here. And this community operation at the Benedictine has been in place to help people pursue those legal rights in as humanitarian a way as we can.
All right, Steve Kosacek, stay with us for another segment. We'll talk about your visit with the Border Patrol after we hear from Mona's Danish Bakery. And as you know, Councilman, they're very excited at Mona's. They're now doing a hot breakfast. And the launch has gone very well. I've been up there now 2 weekends and tried several. The challah bread French toast, Steve Kosacek, was absolutely delicious up at Mona's.
I hope they don't put the calorie count on their menu. That would ruin the fun.
No, there is no calorie count. And I had the blueberry and chocolate chip pancakes last Sunday. So they're doing a real great job with the morning breakfast served all day at Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. They're open right now for lunch. How about a great sandwich on that wonderful bread from Mona's? The website is Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Again, the website, monasdanishbakery.com. Also a link to buckmastershow.com. More with Steve Kosacek, Ward 6, Tucson City Councilman, right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To learn more, please visit rtamobility.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm passionate about travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. And when I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 9 airlines flying nonstop to 22 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Every day, your safety and freedom is protected by the service and sacrifice of our first responders and military. Please join us in this community effort to build the Southern Arizona Veterans and First Responders Living Memorial, a place to celebrate those who have paid the price for our freedom and those who continue to defend it today. Help create a space where these memories, past, present, and future, will live forever. Learn more and donate by visiting vfrm.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on this Thursday edition on 1030 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk. Ward 6, Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasachek is with us. We've been talking about this humanitarian crisis where Tucson is really at the front lines, and 7,000 migrant guests have been processed through Catholic Community Services, many of them staying and guests at the Benedictine Monastery Chapel. I understand, Councilman, that you met with the Border Patrol, and did you tour? Is that key facility still up and running?
Yeah, two different issues. Southwest Key is still up and running. That is under the umbrella of HHS. I did go through there within the last week. That is unaccompanied minors. That's the cohort that they get. The meeting with Border Patrol, the catalyst for that meeting was really that we are seeing the families, and so Border Patrol will drop off the families, the mom and kids or the dad and kids, at the Benedictine, and that was the gist of the meeting for them, as to how do we work better together in terms of scheduling the drop-offs and, you know, better communications. That was a substantial meeting. We had at the meeting representatives from Sinema's office, McSally, Grijalva, Kirkpatrick's office. They were there to listen. I hope that they absorbed a lot, because quite frankly, nobody from our federal delegation is really engaged this, nor the state, Frank, for that matter. We had the county administrator there. Chuck Huckleberry was there. Jonathan was there, the mayor. We had Chris Magnus, TPD, and Mark Napier from Pima County Sheriff's Office, people from the Red Cross and some other nonprofits. The meeting really was, and a dozen or so Border Patrol people and others. The meeting was really called because, and I mentioned earlier, that we were told to expect 200 plus people per day for the indefinite future. Border Patrol is being overwhelmed by this issue. Our nonprofits and the people we're working with at the Benedictine are being overwhelmed by this, and so we had to get together in the same room. I'm not a huge fan of Border Patrol. I think it's a very insular group that would probably do themselves well if they had a better rapport with the community. Mm-hmm. And I hope that meeting was a first step in that direction. Sitting in the same room, looking at each other in the eye, and having a conversation is certainly better than otherwise, and the otherwise is what we've seen. So the outcome was a commitment to stand up a steering committee. It will include some people from ICE and Border Patrol, but it will also include some of the nonprofit people. I would advocate that Chief Magnus be involved in it as well. He's very engaged in this and needs to be a point of contact. So that committee will be stood up, and the purpose of it will be to keep these communications open so that, as I mentioned, we don't get a phone call saying in 2 hours we're going to drop off, you know, 30 people. It's more along the lines of today we just arrested 250 people in Lukeville. It'll take us a couple of days to process them so that the community has a couple of days to prepare and get ready to receive them. You know, that's the kind of communication that we need. In addition to that, I asked them for a commitment that they would no longer do street releases. There's nothing humanitarian about dropping somebody off on a street corner. Mm-mm. Who has been on the road for days and days and days, doesn't speak the language, has small kids, maybe sick, certainly hungry, poorly clothed, and very tired, and say, here's a bus ticket and find your way to Toledo. When, yeah, they don't speak the language. Yeah. So getting that commitment, they were not willing to commit to no more of those. But what they did say is that we will commit to reaching out to the nonprofits and to whatever infrastructure you have in place before, and that will be our go-to of last resort. So from that standpoint, I think it was a productive meeting. I guess we'll see going forward, and we'll have a test case here in the next couple of days with the people now starting to show up again in Lukeville. As to whether or not we get phone calls hours in advance or days in advance.
You brought up something that just really resonated. 30-plus years in the community, I remember the day when the Border Patrol was all over the media. They were so media-friendly. They would reach out. They wanted to be on the air. They wanted to be on TV. You talk about a total reversal and shutdown toward, as you called it, I think, insular. No question about it.
Yeah, and for and we don't expect law enforcement agency to come and start giving us names and identities of agents or anything like that. That's not what we're after. But they have what's called a daily release briefing. And if they're having a daily release briefing, then the community members who are going to be receiving what they release ought to be a part of that conversation.
Yes.
and that's what I said to them, is that when you have that briefing, I don't want to be in the room, but certainly our police chief or one of his designees ought to be in the room. Somebody from one of the major nonprofits ought to be at least on a phone line saying, here's what we can absorb today, and talk about where the people are going to be distributed. As opposed to a phone call after the briefing advising us of what their decisions were. You know, we're the ones who are carrying the load in the community, and by we're, I mean the community and the nonprofits and all that. And so for them to be able to hear from us while the decisions are being made, as opposed to making the decisions and advising us of their conclusions, is really the way this needs to be. And so I really think that some of the guys in the room got it, that they're from an agency standpoint, they would be really serving themselves well if they were more participatory and collaborative in these kinds of decisions, as opposed to, just behind closed doors, we'll make decisions and move from there. I understand they've got a different kind of culture mentality. You know, they're law enforcement. Frankly, when I was doing some work in trafficking here in the city a few years ago, getting TPD to buy into a diversion program as opposed to busting somebody and, for prostitution and taking her to jail, that was a tough nut to crack. But TPD got it. They're on board with this diversion thing. Let's look more long term. And I think Border Patrol and ICE would again serve themselves well to say, to understand that we get the fact that you're law enforcement, but that doesn't mean you gotta circle the wagons and not include
right.
anybody else in the conversation.
All right, I've only got about 2.5 minutes left with you, and I would like your opinion on Chief Magnus, who was on the program on Friday, saying it is time to readdress red light cameras in this community. He wants to begin the conversation now. What do you say, Steve Kasachek?
About Chief Magnus or red light cameras?
Well, you can give me an opinion on both, actually,
okay.
But red light for cameras.
Okay, I'll end with that. I totally support Chief Magnus. I was on the phone with him today. I was on the phone with him last night. We have a very good working relationship. I think he understands the community. He's out in the community on a regular basis, has a very, very public presence. And the neighbors and business people that I deal with respect him greatly, and so do I. As far as red light cameras are concerned, that was a voter decision. You know, that's not something that the city council can simply pick up and re-implement. I understand why the voters voted them down. I think we could do some very productive things without them, and that is identify more accurately, I don't get into the whole history of it, but the geometry of the intersection. People didn't know when they were actually legally entering the intersection and were getting ticketed, and that's one of the reasons that the cameras went away, is because people didn't know the rules of the game. But the data seems to show that when they are in place, properly implemented, that they serve as a deterrent to people red light running. It will be a tough sell in this community. It was not a close vote. The public was pretty overwhelming in saying let's get rid of him, and they drop kicked him pretty far down the field. So if Magnus wants to try and reinitiate that conversation, I would suggest it's probably going to be a pretty tough lift.
All right, Councilman, thank you very much, and good luck with your efforts in this humanitarian crisis that we are facing. But I think dealing with bravely and doing an excellent job. I really appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Well, I appreciate it, and I have all the confidence that this community is going to continue to step up to the plate and really meet the needs of these people.
Have a great afternoon. Thanks.
You too, Bill. Take care.
This portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. It's a beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment, the southwest corner, just 3-hour drive from Tucson. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. Coming up over the Memorial Day weekend, the Blues Festival. It's become a national festival now, and they get some great talent. So that's going to be Memorial Day weekend in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. There you'll find the complete listing of great places to stay and all sorts of recreation opportunities in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. It's 12:30 on Buckmaster, the 10:30 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. The Community Food Bank having their really signature event coming up a week from Saturday. You'll hear all about it right after this. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine in a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. You just heard me talking about Green Things. Let me add a little bit more to that. Green Things on 13 acres, now home to Zocalo. For years, Zocalo was over at Country Club and Broadway in that area, and they had beautiful material, handmade furniture from Mexico, Latin America, Europe. Well, the good news is that material is still at Zocalo, but Zocalo is over at Green Things. They have five shops in what we call kind of Zocalo Village. So 3384 East River Road, Green Things by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. So you get all your plants and beautiful things for your home. Coming up on Saturday, 1 week from Saturday, it is the, I believe, 27th mm-hmm. annual.
It is.
Norma Cable is with us from the Community Food Bank of Southern Arizona. And this signature event is when the letter carriers of this country team up with community food banks. And it's been a very successful program. It's called Stamp Out Hunger, the food drive. And over the years, Norma, this has really fed a lot of families.
And it really has. It is our biggest food drive of the year. Last year, we brought in more than 250,000 pounds of food.
Whoa!
Uh-huh, in one day. So it is a massive effort.
How does it work for those that aren't familiar with the program? How do the food carriers get the food?
Sure. So how it works from the beginning is you at home gather a bag of food and make a donation. And all you have to do that day, which is Saturday, May 11th, is leave it by your mailbox. And we do ask you to leave it before regular delivery time of your mail. I think most people know when their letter carrier is coming by.
Oh, yes.
So have it ready and have it there before they come by. And then those fabulous letter carriers, and this does go on across the country, the National Association of Letter Carriers, they are the ones who will be picking up those bags of food all day long, in addition to doing their regular job, right, of getting the mail to you. So we are just so grateful for them on this day. They really are our heroes, and they have been now. This is the 27th year. And without them, you know, we just couldn't get this done. I think this is a big success because it's so easy for the average person to just leave a bag by mm-hmm. their mailbox. It really is the letter carriers who are using their muscle and taking this and making it such a success. So we're so grateful and very excited to see it happen coming up already, May 11th.
When those letter carrier trucks return to the post office, they must just be loaded with bags of food.
And that is the thing. We do have volunteers who do support them, uh-huh. so that often if that truck gets filled up.
If the truck's filled up, what then?
Right. So we do have volunteers that can go out and meet them and get some food from mm-hmm. them. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they do have to make additional runs. It is a long day of work for the letter carriers,
yeah.
and we do appreciate those extra hours that they are putting in. But you're absolutely right. It's right. a little truck meant to
sure.
hold the mail, right? And people are generous with their food donations, and we so appreciate it because this does come at a critical time of the year for the Community Food Bank.
Would you encourage folks who have a few hours to become volunteers that day?
I absolutely would. And you know, this takes the work of our letter carriers that are working throughout Southern Arizona, but it also takes 400 volunteers
Whoa.
To make this happen. And we're in the process of filling those volunteer spots, but we are running a little short this year, and we would love to have people give us a call or email. The email address would be volunteer@communityfoodbank.org, or you can call us 520-622-0525. We really do need to get those spots filled up. And we do have some openings, especially in the late afternoon, mm-hmm. from 3 in the afternoon to 7 p.m., mm-hmm. because as you can mm-hmm. probably guess, as the mail carriers make their rounds, then it becomes a question of when to return to the post office with all that food.
And start your offloading
that's
of
right.
all that
and
food.
And that's often an afternoon and late evening time period when things really are coming through and when we are seeing those donations that need to get offloaded from the truck and then sorted so that we can get them to the Community Food Bank that day. It's a massive effort.
Norma Cable is with us on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Norma does such a great job at the Community Food Banks for Southern Arizona. And we are talking about kind of the signature event, Stamp Out Hunger, the food drive that's coming up a week from Saturday. Now, who knows what the weather is going to be like? I think we've been lucky, Norma, that mm-hmm. we haven't had a 100 degree plus temperature
right.
yet.
Right.
Been not too bad, really, this
yeah.
spring. So who knows, though, a week from Saturday, what kind of temperatures we're going to have. Does that enter into the equation when it comes to what food should be put out?
Absolutely. And thank you for bringing that up, Bill, because we definitely do not want people to leave anything perishable out there. And you're absolutely right. We don't know, and we can't guarantee what the temperature is going to be like. But we've all been here for a while and know what May can bring in Tucson. So we are asking for people to donate non-perishable goods, the canned goods, stay away from glass jars, please, or anything that could melt from exposure
or
in that
explode.
Heat. Right, right. And part of those volunteers are going to be helping to drive those routes, and they will be wearing T-shirts and identified as working that day for the community food bank for this effort. So some of them will actually help out in the routes that need help getting that food collected and getting it put into one place so it can go back to the post office and get sorted. So all kinds of people will be helping. And of course, this doesn't happen without the donations coming in the first place, but especially because of the letter carriers stepping forth and the U.S. Postal Service. And then locally, also Tucson Electric Power, who helps us out by printing the bags that should be left in your mailbox before the drive. So that you have a bag that you can just fill it with your donation and leave it very easily by your mailbox that day.
Here we are now 4 months into the year, into the fifth month. What kind of a year has it been in, as far as donations and need for the food bank?
It has been an interesting year, and we did see our donations down a little bit at year end, and we weren't quite expecting that. And then in the beginning of the year, we did see the government shutdown and certainly some effects from that. We saw federal workers who never thought that they would be needing to ask for help coming to the food bank. And we did our best to make sure that they were treated with the respect that everyone should get and everyone does get when they come to the food bank. But that was certainly
an unexpected kind of hit in as far as the pantry level.
Might
have been a little more depleted than it would have
been.
That's right.
That's right. And also, I think, Bill, a great eye-opener for people on just how quickly you can go from having a steady job and a steady income to needing to ask for help, and how that isn't necessarily something that you need to be ashamed of. It is a position you can be put in over no control, with no control of your own. So for us, it was a great opportunity for us to get some food out to employees, both at the federal prison, at the airport, and then at another location, just a church that wanted to help in a distribution, just to get that food out and know that it is there. I think for so many people, the community food bank has come through at a time when they were down on their luck. Maybe they had a bad accident. Maybe someone lost their job. Maybe it's working families who were doing their best to pay the bills and just can't make it. So I think for a lot of people, that really showed that the community food bank is there when you need help, and thank goodness for that. We were happy to help.
You have a large footprint in Southern Arizona.
We do. Yeah. We do. We serve five counties throughout Southern Arizona. We served nearly 200,000 people last year with emergency food assistance, and we know that a third of those are children. So again, we're asking, when you do make that donation, please make it a healthy and nutritious one that may be going to a senior, maybe going to a child, maybe going to a working family. So really, we're looking at more and more at the health impact of our donations and what that puts into the community. So we are asking, if you get to the grocery store this weekend and you have a chance to stock up.
Yeah, give us a couple of suggestions that might, some items that you'd like to see in those in those bags for the letter carriers.
Absolutely. So what we would like you to look at is maybe some low sodium items, canned beans, canned vegetables, canned tomatoes, canned soup. Health is something really for all of us that is something we can pay attention to, and also in our food donations as well. And then we're also asking for low sugar cereal, for peanut butter, for rice, and for whole wheat pasta, and then some prepackaged nuts. That's a great donation. Just some plain nuts, a great source of protein. Again, really doing the best we can to build the health of our community. We know that a lot of the people that we serve suffer from diet-related disease. Often that's diabetes or high blood pressure brought on by not necessarily having a lot of money to spend on food. And we know that the fresh vegetables and fresh fruits are often the most expensive things in the store. So we really want to keep an eye out on health. And if you can, make that donation just to be as healthy and nutritious as you can.
All right. It's Saturday, a week from Saturday, the 27th annual Stamp Out Hunger. It's the Letter Carriers Food Drive, teaming up with the Community Food Bank of Southern Arizona. Volunteer information again?
Again, at volunteer@communityfoodbank.org. Please give us an email, or you can call us at 520-622-6222. 0525. You can also go to our website, which is communityfoodbank.org. If you would like to donate and make a monetary donation and support this drive that way, that's great. You can find that on our webpage, also at communityfoodbank.org/stampouthunger. So we just welcome people's donations of time and food and money, and we just appreciate the community support that comes forward.
All right. We appreciate what you do, Norma.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you very much. This portion of the Buckmaster Show presented by my favorite bakery in town, Norma. It's Mona's Danish Bakery. Have you been up there?
I have.
Okay, I understand. There you
that.
Go. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise, now serving a very delicious hot breakfast. They begin at 6:30 in the morning. The new grill is in. Steve and the team, they've got two full-time chefs on board now, and so they're really doing a great job with the breakfast. So give it a try. They're open right now for lunch, and if you'd like breakfast, that's available for you too. Northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise, Mona's Danish Bakery, monasdanishbakery.com, or at buckmastershow.com. There's a link not only to Mona's, but all of the great partners. These are people, many of them have been with us since day one, since we launched the radio project back in January of 2011. We thank them very much for their support. Back after this on Buckmaster.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from the Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an Ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We are joined in studio by attorney Don Luce of Luce Law Group with offices here in Tucson and Phoenix. Mr. Luce is the Buckmaster Show legal contributor. so proud of the team that we have assembled here. Over two dozen now regular contributors to the program. Don's the author of two very popular books, Arizona Laws 101, a handbook for now for non-lawyers in its second printing, and now in its second printing, Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. Don, good to see you.
Good to see you, Bill.
And thank you. I have the copy, the second edition now, of Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. And this is really, this is a handbook, Don Luce, for anyone interested in wealth preservation, family protection, and succession planning, something that should be at the top of everyone's to-do list.
Well, thank you, Bill. I spent some time updating estate planning in Arizona because, as we've discussed over the years, the law changes, and I felt that the book, which was originally published in 2008, was ready for an update, so we got out a second edition this year, and I'm very proud of that work. Thank you.
And one more comment on that before we talk about the news. Some people are just really afraid to even talk about estate planning because they feel, Don Luce, it's so complicated and they don't really know what to do. Can't the conversation, though, begin at a rather simple level?
It does. And a lot of people, after we're finished, they say, I can't believe how easy that was.
Yeah. But so, they do. They fear it and they think it's going to be a lot of red tape and everything else.
Well, it's something that I think a lot of people avoid because it does involve consideration of some unpleasant things that could happen to anyone. But my belief is better to be prepared than not.
There you go. Arizona finally getting the cell phone driving ban. My goodness, Don Luce, this has been up and around and kicked. Steve Farley, when he was up at the legislature, I think brought this up over 10 years ago. I don't know how many sessions he tried to get this thing through.
Well, you know, and that, I agree. That has been the, if you will, cloud hanging over our state. Mm-hmm. Because before we adopted this statewide ban, 47 other states had adopted similar laws. And so we became the 48th state to actually outlaw the use of cell phones while driving. Now, to our credit, this law goes a little further than a lot of the other states, and we're only the 18th state to ban any handheld phone use. So in other states, texting and driving is prohibited. In Arizona, it's not just texting. This law, which Governor Ducey signed April 22nd, as I mentioned, goes to essentially any handheld phone use. So if you're texting, of course, it's mm-hmm. it's prohibited. Yes. If you're talking, if you're holding the phone, it's prohibited. If you're looking at a map, using the internet, watching videos, prohibited. Now, what you can do is you can use Bluetooth, which is part of a lot of cars' mm-hmm. Electronic systems now, and that's not prohibited so long as you're not using the phone. You can use the phone if you're at a stoplight or you're pulled over, which I think is kind of unique. Mm-hmm. And you can use the phone if it's mounted and using it for navigation purposes. So do's, don'ts, but the general rule is you cannot use a handheld device while you're operating a motor vehicle.
Is there a grace period?
Interestingly, there is. So some people might find this ironic. The law took effect immediately because it contained an emergency clause. Mm-hmm. Now, as we know from other legislation that we've talked about over the years, the bills generally become law 90 days after on the 91st day after the legislature adjourns.
Right.
So typically, the legislature sends in excess of 300 bills to the governor. The ones that the governor signs, then sit there until after the legislature adjourns, and then they take effect automatically on the 91st day, unless they contain an emergency clause, which this bill did. So it took effect immediately, but until January 1st, 2021, police can only issue warnings. They can't issue citations for violation of this of this prohibition. So it is possible that a motorist can be stopped for just holding a phone and issued a warning, but that warning doesn't carry with it any fine. That changes on January 1st, 2021, which is approximately 20 months from now. At that time, if you get a violation, your fine is going to be at least $75 and potentially as much as $149. And any subsequent violation is going to be $150 to $250. Now, interestingly, at least in my mind, is that a ticket under this statute will not lead to points, which is curious because other moving violations carry with them points against your record.
But this will not.
It will not. Now, there is an exception for how it affects truck drivers who, of course, hold commercial licenses, and they could temporarily lose their commercial licenses. But for the general motoring public, you're going to have a fine. It's going to be a monetary fine. There are not going to be points involved. Now, lest you think that that's not a very significant penalty, let me just add, if a driver causes an accident while using a phone, that driver can be charged with a misdemeanor, which could carry a six-month jail sentence,
wow,
have their license suspended, and be ordered to pay restitution of up to $100,000.
Oh, my goodness.
So,
wow.
I think it's pretty clear that the law, which some people say is long overdue, is now here. It doesn't essentially have teeth until January 1, 2021. But when it does go into effect in full force, if somebody causes an accident while they're using their phone, they're in big trouble.
What about other cities, some local, more than two dozen, that have now handheld cell phone bans? Don Luce, what does the state law then supersede these laws?
Okay, it will on January 1, 2021. Until then, the cities and counties that have enacted handheld cell phone bans, like Tucson, Pima County, Phoenix, Tempe, those cities and counties will be able to enforce their laws just as they have been up until now, and they'll be able to do that until the state law takes effect in full force on January 1st, 2021. Interestingly, other cities can also adopt bans until then, so long as the new bans are no stricter than the new state law. And on January 1st, 2021, all local laws that prohibit cell phone use while driving essentially become superseded and will no longer be enforceable.
Mm. Quickly moving on, another bill that requires schools to report violent threats to kids' parents. The governor, did he sign this or is it on his desk or what, Don Luce?
The report that I saw said that it was sent to him for signature. I'm not aware that he signed it. But
what's the bottom line on it?
Okay. Under this bill, a school district governing board or a charter school is required to prescribe and enforce policies for school personnel to report any suspected crime against a person or property that is a serious offense, as defined in the statute, or that involves a deadly weapon or dangerous instrument or serious physical injury, and any conduct that poses a threat of death or serious physical injury to an employee, student, or other person on school property. Now, the report has to be made to the local law enforcement agency, and the policy has to require that the school district or the charter school notify the parent or guardian of each student who is involved in a suspected crime or any conduct that is described in this statute. This is different than what currently exists. Under the current state of affairs, it is not necessary that the school district or the charter school actually prescribe and enforce a policy like the one I just described. And in fact, there's a reported case of a student at Mountain Trail Middle School in Paradise Valley who was one of three targets of a death threat, and that student's parents weren't even notified. And so the legislature, in response to that case and other reports like it, determined that it would be in the public's best interest, and probably in response to the national tragedies that we've seen, to require every school in Arizona to have a policy that requires that not only the local law enforcement agencies be notified, but also the parents or guardians of the students affected be notified.
All right, Don Luce of Luce Law Group, offices in Tucson and Phoenix. His new book, second edition of Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know, is now out, and that's his companion book, is Arizona Laws 101, a handbook for non-lawyers, that also in its second printing. Don, it's always a pleasure to see you.
My pleasure, Bill.
Thank you very much. On behalf of Mr. Luce and, of course, Bob Dio, my engineer producer, I'm Bill Buckmaster, wishing you a very pleasant afternoon on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Coming up next, Around the Table with Jennifer English.